And haven't we gone a little overboard with these colored ribbons for different causes? Every cause has its own colored ribbon now. Red for AIDS, blue for child abuse, pink for breast cancer, green for the rainforest, purple for urban violence. I got a brown one. You know what it means? Eat shit, motherfucker! Eat shit, motherfucker!
Ecology is all about relationships among different kinds of beings, and consciousness is about relation. Consciousness is always relational, and that's been my field of study as a psychologist for 50 years. And as many people know, I originally worked with psychedelic substances at Harvard with Tim Leary and Alfred Ramdas, and then expanded working with all kinds of ways of looking and understanding states of consciousness. So the first volume is called The Expansion of Consciousness, and that's a key concept that I want to introduce. Most people don't realize that consciousness can be expanded. Mm. It's not just fixed, and consciousness expanding states are states where you get more insights, more understandings, and useful in meditation, but they're not, you know, in everyday life, you also want to be able to contract consciousness. We call that concentration. So when you're driving or you're doing something technically, like looking through a microscope or something, you want to concentrate consciousness. So it's not that expansion is good and concentration is bad. It's both are appropriate, and you want them to be both under your own control. So that's the first volume talks about that. The second volume talks about the roots of war and domination, and that's, for me, a personal subject, because I was a war child. I was born in Germany in the Second World War, at the height of the Second World War, and I've always been, it's been my lifelong kind of obsessive interest is to try to understand what is it that drives people to war, peoples. And then the third volume is called Alchemical Divination, and Alchemical Divination is the name of the process that I use and I teach. Alchemy has to do with transformations of all kinds, and divination is accessing inner sources of knowledge and understanding for self-growth. And so that's, the fourth volume is called Mind Space and Time Stream. And that refers to the fact that each state of consciousness that we experience, including the sleep state, dream state, normal state, has its own time and has its own space. Mm-hmm. We know that from dreams, because in dreams you can fly through the air and visit, you know, somebody thousands of miles away. It doesn't take any long, because time and space are completely different. So in that book I look at that. Mm-hmm. How you look at the time and space and the different states of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth book is called The Life Cycle of the Human Soul. So this is looking at the life cycle being, we normally think of a human life going from birth to death, but we now know that there's, you know, the very rich inner life and psychology of prenatal existence. And also we know a lot about death and what's the after death and the near death and after death states. And you're going way beyond psychology there into some of the traditional systems of understanding. So what is incarnation and what is reincarnation and the journey of the soul, really. And then there's a volume on the six life paths. What are the main paths of work, occupation, that people work on, the path of the healer, the path of the warrior, the path of the knowledge seeker, the path of the communicator, the path of the teacher, like that. So I talk about those. And then the last one volume that I just published called Worlds Within and Worlds Beyond. So that's what kind of cosmology, what kind of worldview emerges out of these states of consciousness. So I'm in all my work, I've gathered accounts of people's experiences. Some of them have been from my own group, from my own private practice, and some of them are ones that I've observed. I'm a participant observer. I've been an observer and a communicator and gatherer of these different realms of consciousness all my life. So that's what I'm going to be talking about.
Excellent. The Ecology of Consciousness series is a very huge work. I mean, what was your methodology in bringing all of this knowledge together?
Well, they're like field reports. You think of me as an anthropologist, which I like. I mean, I'm sort of an anthropologist. You know, in the study of consciousness, it's not like ordinary psychology. You don't do experiments with, you know, where you're you have a control group or something like that, because mm-hmm. you can't set it up like that. If you're studying dreams, for example, you have to take the accounts of the, because consciousness happens inside. There's no behavior mm-hmm. to observe, you know. So you have to ask people, and people talk about it. This is what the Dalai Lama has called first-person empiricism. It's like mm-hmm. If you're doing studies of meditation, for example, you have to actually, the person has to themselves talks about their experience, and that's, you know, there's not outward behavior. The person's kind of sitting there with their eyes closed. There's nothing to observe or nothing to measure. Well, you could measure brain waves, but that's not what's happening in consciousness. That's what's happening in the brain. So, to study consciousness involves communication, and in that sense, and in particularly with these drugs that affect consciousness, completely different than any other kind of drug, because they don't have any significant effect on the heart or the muscles or they might have some effects on the brain, but that's not the important thing that's happened in people. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, certain substances like MDMA is used in the treatment of trauma, so they're adjuncts to psychotherapy mm-hmm. in that sense. So there's nothing particular about the drug. It has to do about people, and it's not the drug that produces the therapy. The therapy is produced by the interaction of the therapist and the person, the healer, and the drug is like the furniture, in a way, it's actually irrelevant, and that's one of the points I keep on emphasizing. Mm-hmm. And these particular drugs, it's misleading to ask what this drug does is blah blah blah, mm-hmm. because what it does, it depends what you do with it. You know, that's the crucial thing. Like take MDMA, which is also known as ecstasy, is an incredibly useful and the most useful drug for the treatment, psychotherapy treatment of mm-hmm. trauma. Yeah. But it's also used as ecstasy, under a different name, by people who want to dance at raves. Now, they're not interested in healing any traumas. That's not the focus. But it's the same drug. So what does the drug do? See, so I'm interested in that, and it's a very interesting question as a psychologist. Mm-hmm. How is it possible that these same drugs sort of facilitate something coming out? And all depends, as my old friend Tim Leary used to say, mm-hmm. set in the setting, the intention, and the context of what it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very limited, very myopic. He's just like completely tuned into his script, and that guy's very just one dimensional. So is like Neil deGrasse Tyson and those populists, and they need to be, you know, they need to be on point and to like what's that quote by George W. Bush, you got to catapult the propaganda. Yeah, catapult it, man. Just keep on saying 97%, 97%. All these smart people believe this, you got to believe it too, because you don't want to be a dumb guy, you want to be a smart guy, you want to be the 97% that's smart. And if you're not with the 97% of the scientists, then you're dumb. You're a hayseed, you're backwards, you're a young earth creationist, you're a flat earther, you're a rube, you're an ultramaroon, you're a nincompoop. It's just that simple. It's social pressure. It's leveraging that more than anything. And that's what it's about. It's just repetition. And appeal to ridicule, keep doing it, rinse and repeat, keep going on the shows, repeat the same mantra. Don't go into specifics, Bill. Don't do it. You're going to get yourself into bad trouble. Just stay on point. And he does a pretty good job at that. He's just a media whore propagandist. And, because that's how people's minds work, you know, that's how they're influenced, that's how they're persuaded. And like that guy I was talking to the other night, he didn't have any answer for that. And I think it's a very fair, straightforward question, you know. I think it's at the very root of the issue, you know, like, why the hell wouldn't plants use it like they do when they're inside a greenhouse environment? What's so different about plants that are outside a greenhouse as opposed to plants that are inside a greenhouse? There's no difference. A plant's a plant. You take it and move it into the greenhouse and you pump carbon dioxide. And what does the plant do? It absorbs the carbon dioxide. It turns the carbon dioxide into plant material. The plant is bigger. So that means, where did that carbon go? It went into the plant. And now it's no longer in the atmosphere. It's part of the plant. Very, very simple. It's not hard to understand. So if you put it in the atmosphere, what's it going to do? Well, the plant's going to freaking absorb it. It's gonna love the extra carbon dioxide. It's gonna use it. It's gonna grow bigger. It's gonna grow stronger. It's gonna be good for plants. It's gonna be good for trees. It's gonna be good for vines. It's gonna be good for grass.
There's no sense in always running. Take what you want and go. Just give me time. Always unmoving. The world pass you by.
Always unknown. So the archons in their base form are a chaotic, imbalanced, inverted state of awareness, thus frequency. And this is where we go to some strange places. The rabbit hole.
The rabbit hole.
Laughter and the follies that are locked inside my head.
Well, I've owned fitness clubs now for 25 years. So I opened my first one 25 years ago. And I was very interested at, I really wanted to make profit in the business. And that depends on you helping your people achieve their health-related goals. And what happened, it was very obvious early on, and I didn't really investigate it early on, but when you get people in shape, what I was seeing kind of en masse, people had a hard time keeping the weight off or keeping healthy or staying away from things that hurt them. And not only did it affect my profit, it affected my self-esteem. It affected, my vision of myself. I didn't know if I was doing the right work or not. What was I really missing? And that's when I started coming across, the topics that there's going to be some, like self-sabotage is definitely related to pretty well trauma in your childhood. So, these people were kind of consciously expressing that they wanted a better life, but subconsciously there was something completely inhibiting them from achieving that goal. So it said that the conscious mind controls 1-5% of our behavior, and the subconscious or unconscious mind controls 95-99% of our behavior. So what is it? Why does a person declare with their conscious mind that they want to lose weight or stop drinking or, declare a New Year's resolution? But what is it that makes them afraid of achieving and keep walking the path to their best life? And when you open that can of worms, you're going to get into, it's almost like a Pandora's box of what's wrong with our society in the nth degree. You're going to really start understanding why our society has to change, because what's happening are people are placed in so much fear that they're really having a hard time breaking away from the crowd. So when you're placed in trauma as a child, all you do from that point on is try to reestablish your safety. And in our society, there's no safety in being healthy or successful. So what happens is when I have many clients, for example, I'll give you an example of a lady just this week. She was always avoiding the certain diet protocols that I was encouraging. And she was doing that because she didn't want to feel kind of outside her peer group, because everybody in her peer group was unhealthy. So she was really making up every excuse possible. And this was, going on for months. She just didn't want to adhere to any of the diet advice I was giving. So I knew she was kind of traumatized. So I took a stricter role as an authority figure and kind of pressured her a bit more, kind of knowing what I know about self-sabotage and trauma. I became the traumatizing figure in her life, put a little bit more pressure on her. And then she started the diet. And she couldn't lose any weight whatsoever for about, 2 years now. She's been gaining a steady 5 pounds a year. And in the first week of the diet, she lost 9 pounds. And then she started saying, "I'm really thirsty. I can't do it. I'm too thirsty. And this could even be the subconscious mind trying to grasp at any excuse possible to back out, because she's so afraid to be her best, because her subconscious mind tracks every news piece, every radio show, every TV show, every movie. And in our society, guess who's on the front page of the paper? Guess who the charity fundraising's for? Guess who's the only one that gets support in the society? It's the unhealthy person. the people who are truly healthy are attacked constantly, either directly or indirectly. And the subconscious mind libraries every attack and understands beyond a shadow of a doubt that if you dare leave the security of the herd, that you will be attacked either indirectly or indirectly. So this is what's really keeping people down. And then you get back, like you reverse engineer, what is it that's traumatizing all these people? That they're so afraid that they have to always sort of run after the authority figure and become like a chronic people pleaser. Mm-hmm. And in our society, to be a chronic people pleaser, and that's one of the side effects of being traumatized. And the only reason that happens, Ronnie, is because if you're traumatized, your kind of neurological systems become full to the brim with fear, panic, and trauma.
Yes.
So what it means is that you can't take one more drop. You just really don't want to have any further trauma, because you are so mortified of the first pain and panic that you experienced, you'll do absolutely anything to avoid the next trauma. So it's very similar to what's called battered woman syndrome. A battered woman do you know what battered woman syndrome is?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't studied it, but I understand the concept.
Yeah, so you have a tyrannical authority figure,
right,
that was the husband, and it doesn't matter what the request is to the battered wife. It could be get my slippers, it could be get my newspaper, have my drink ready when I come home. The traumatized person simply tries to avoid the next trauma regardless of what the request is. And this is really what's happening inside of our society as a collective. Is everybody's so placed in fear that they'll do whatever the authority figure declares, not because it makes any sense. And not because they've researched, I mean, this could go anywhere from Ronnie, this could be people vaccinating, this could be, you know, someone trying to lose weight. They don't want to cause a fuss. Because the fuss is the next trauma, and they're already full of trauma, so they will do absolutely anything to avoid the next one, which means they have their minds controlled from the outside. So they lose their ability to lead their own lives, because they go from interaction to interaction, so they might interact with 30 people a day. And a traumatized person's sole goal is to make sure there's no conflict with any of those 30 people.
Yeah, it's like the slave becomes complicit with slavery, with being enslaved.
Simply because slave master holds the whip.
Right.
And that opens up, like I said, a whole Pandora's box, explaining why our society is drowning. This is very old technology. This isn't like a misunderstanding or we're just sort of traumatizing the public by mistake. This is a very ancient way by which 100,000 people can control 8 billion people with nothing but authority and reward and punishment systems. And of course, reward and punishment systems can program people to act like circus animals, for sure. But if the circus animal is traumatized, you get a lot better obedience out of that circus animal.
Yes, it's exactly how you train an elephant or a tiger or a bear, these wild, extremely powerful animals that no human could physically compete with. But how do you train and how do you basically enslave these creatures? You know, it's you have to inflict some kind of trauma in order to in order to, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess get them to cower down to the perceptual or very real threat of you know, being damaged further.
Yeah, and this is how sort of we're being farmed as a collective without our knowledge. We're thinking a lot of these traumatizing incidents are normal parts of our society, and they are. But when you start analyzing the society over the full spectrum, you can't help but notice that the movies are traumatizing, the TV shows are traumatizing, the birthing protocols are traumatizing. And as a side note, all mind control research has proven that traumatizing the human in the first 7 years of life is the most effective to instill reflexive obedience in the mind control slave. And this is why a lot of the children, it doesn't matter if it's not co-sleeping. So, there's some books about not co-sleeping, not breastfeeding long enough. And we could get into a whole gamut of authority-based attacks on the children, which makes them very afraid to do anything outside what authority tells them or what's accepted by the herd. I'd like to also mention that this sort of mind control technology can be used to evolve a society, can be used to ascend, can be used to grow and mature as a society. You can give people rewards for being their best. You can cultivate a society where the herd is at a perfect weight, where no one drinks, where no one does any drugs. And you can make that the social norm, and you can have the healthiest person in the tribe on the front page of the paper. You can have a charity drive for a new organic garden for the healthiest family in your community. You can use this mind control technology to better a society, but currently we're being rewarded and punished and traumatized in a way where we're getting thrown down the evolutionary ladder on purpose by people who benefit from our dysfunction, our disempowerment, and our disorientation. I hope that makes some kind of sense.
It makes every kind of possible sense. And the practicalities of what you're talking about and how every single day, almost moment by moment, the majority of people are being bombarded with subliminal imagery, subliminal symbolism, invisible Wi-Fi disruptive technologies that are disrupting our biofield and our biofrequency, which is the most important tuning fork for creating or co-creating our personal reality and the life that we aspire for. And one of the things that I wanted to return to is this idea that people are genuinely, or I should say subconsciously or unconsciously, afraid of being their very best, because that right there, that phrase or that concept is so important for all of us to internalize, because a number of things came up for me personally. When you said that before we got on the phone, I started thinking about certain habit patterns that I had allowed to persist, and I realized, like, wow, that's literally what's going on with me. I'm actually, as far along as I am, comparatively to most people, that's not good enough for where I want to go, and yet I'm noticing I have resistance to being my best self. So what's that about? So I want to kind of flow into that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's just safer to walk in our society as a human mess, because number one, no one picks on the human mess. And if you're really messy, like if you're really going to put a full-time job into being a very messy human, you know, you're going to have people start paying attention to you, coming over and maybe mowing your lawn because you're sick, delivering you dinner. And this sort of program, this sort of mental programming to be afraid of being a natural, intelligent, healthy human being can be, it's very subtle. Like, for example, I've been walking on the beach with my wife. I don't know if you're familiar with my wife and her physical appearance, but she's very healthy. And, you know, when she walks down the beach, she feels subconscious because you can hear some groups of women, and I hear it myself. You hear the whispers of bitch, you know, or skinny bitch, you know. So if you have five women who giggle, and don't forget, the easiest way to mind control has been proven comedy. So when you throw an insult into the subconscious mind with comic effect, it's going to grow like a weed. So you have these five women potentially looking at a healthy female walking down the beach, and instead of kind of admiring her or maybe asking her for knowledge, they might say, oh, she's a skinny bitch, and they kind of laugh. I mean, it's not uncommon, and they're probably not being as vindictive as I'm saying. But each one of those women in the group now thinks that if they get skinny, they're the bitch.
Exactly, yep.
So who wants to be the bitch? Yep. No one. And our whole society's like that, too, is when I walk into a room, say, in my local community, I mean, half of them cheer me on. Don't get me wrong. When I walk in my community, a lot of people admire me, but there's also the other half, which is the mind-controlled masses that I'm trying to allude to, that sort of are very afraid of anybody that makes them contemplate how they maybe they could be a little better. So when I come in and I'm almost 50 years old, I don't have any gray hair. I don't have any gray hair in my beard. I've been in business for myself to 25, you know, and, you know, Jason Kristoff's crazy. Okay. So, you know, yeah, the good looking people, the healthy people, the successful people, yeah, they're crazy. But this is how those people want to make sure you never get too far ahead, because then the herd might change. Right? Because what happens if the herd becomes healthy and successful people? They have to change herds, because all they're doing is trauma. Their behavior is based on being traumatized, and which group is the largest, so that they can find safety and shelter in there that was stolen from them. I feel sorry for these people. Their safety and security, which is supposed to be a naturally gifted thing when you arrive on the planet, has been stolen from them by people who are masters in psychology and develop psychological technology to control the human man long before they control, you know, could manufacture the computer or the cell phone.
Yeah.
So if you're wondering why people have a very hard time becoming more, it's because, you know, 80% of the population are messy.
Mm-hmm.
They're overweight. They're on medications. Even if you speak against medication, it threatens that herd.
Right.
So they're going to come over and attack you in order to modify their safety and security. Not they know that taking the medications makes them more ill. They have the greatest evidence of that of anybody on the planet. Right. The more medications they take, the more sick they get. So this isn't about logic or rational thought. This is about what group is the largest group and which group provides the most safety. That's how it operates. So that kind of traumatized person will always flock toward the group that's the most popular or the most populated in our society. And it brings us full circle back, where if we were to make that larger group that healthy, the scared people would go over there.
Yeah.
But the people, the groups that are orchestrating our societal collapse, understand all of this, and understand that the search for security to reestablish their safety and security has nothing to do with logic. So they're advertising daily that the safest place to be is drinking on a Friday night, smoking a joint on every night after you get home from work, having some wine, being medicated, having sick kids. This is the safe group. Vaccinating your kids, eating poorly,
yeah,
you know, flogging yourself, self-abusing, self-destruction.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because I always say that diet or lifestyle, you know, even the word diet has the word die in it, you know, right?
Right.
So it's like it's a vibrational kind of discrepancy. It's already a dissonant frequency embedded into the word that everybody associates with a lifestyle change. And it's like nobody wants to die, so why am I going to do a diet? But everybody's trying to change their life and live more by taking on a diet that's designed to fail based on kind of the symbolic encryption that it's kind of in all the crazy yo-yo things that come along with it. But one of the things that I wanted to bring up in relation on a personal note, because it just came up for me as you're sharing this, you know, I remember I was raised as a martial artist, and thank goodness for that, because my generation certainly as men did not have any kind of rites of passage. We did not have any kind of ancestral primal nothing, unless you went camping or something, and had some kind of time in nature. But you know, for me, I think I was very fortunate to get that Eastern, very traditional, masculine upbringing. But one thing I found interesting, I didn't think of it so much. It seemed kind of normal that people, when I would change because I would change very quickly, like I would get onto a new idea, it would cause me to grow spiritually, and I would keep it moving. I wouldn't really get too concerned about people that could not move at my own pace. I kind of just realized that was what was going on. But anyways, what I wanted to mention is a little bit of a memory that I have when I was teaching. I had taught over about 500 students from the age of 20, no, the age of 19 till 23. I ran a martial arts school. I had like 500 students, and I was a head instructor, and I had developed incredible relationships with the parents, with the children. I mean, they revered me, you know, as one can imagine, if you've ever been in that kind of teacher student or parent to, you know, to your teacher, your son or daughter's teacher, there's a lot of reverence, there's a lot of respect. One thing I noticed though is that when my life changed and I had a bit of a spiritual awakening, and I decided that I did not want to drink alcohol anymore, I didn't want to party, I didn't want to waste my life force, and I wanted to get into entrepreneurship, and I wanted to change my diet, the more changes I made, the less visible support I received from all the people that years before adored and loved me and were always there by my side, as far as that kind of relationship went. There, I just noticed people actually started, these individuals started kind of turning their back on me in a very weird way. And I just kind of like, I just didn't really think too deeply into it until this moment. I realized like, wow, that's kind of sobering, you know, and it, obviously I was getting sober, but you know, it was like sobering on a deeper level to realize like, wow, it's not logical at all. It's some kind of primal or primordial kind of program that would cause these individuals to turn their back on me when I decided to do something good for myself, because I was under the disillusion that they were actually going to want to come along with me. That was part of my motivation. That was part of my motivation in the beginning, was like, wow, I can actually empower all these amazing people and the parents and the children. I can continue to inspire them by upgrading my lifestyle. But the moment I did that, man, that was a wake-up call.
Yeah, you're not going to get a lot of the support in the society, because when you start, you broke outside the herd, yeah. And so you become an enemy. And you become an enemy for one very concrete reason. You're holding up another example that's different than herd behavior. So when someone in the herd sees something different, there's either the herd is wrong, or you're wrong, And what that means is that there's a 50% chance they're wrong. They don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't like to be reminded. And don't forget, it's not really a primal reaction on their part. This is a new program. Like the most famous teacher in the world, John Taylor Gatto, he received the Teacher of the Year in New York City, Teacher of the Year in New York State. This is what he calls dumbness by design. This is a sort of dumbness and evil that doesn't happen organically in nature. This kind of stupidity and immorality and unethical behavior has to be designed. It cannot live in the human without a lie-based structure, a trauma-based structure, and 24-hour maintenance of those invisible control grids. And when you're traumatized as a child in our society, it's always by authority figures, so you're always lusting after, pleasing, becoming a chronic people pleaser, becoming like a pleaser of authority figures. And that's why most people just take any medication their doctor tells them, because they're scared not to. That's why most people vaccinate, because they're scared not to. And what happens is the subconscious mind libraries so many MSN, front page headlines of, the government judge getting caught for corruption, the government police officer, unfortunately, maybe shooting someone or putting a beat down, the government politician molesting children. The subconscious mind libraries all that. And, and if you're scared, what the subconscious mind says, well, I guess the safest place is to be corrupt. Because this is what happens. You either identify with the slave master or you identify with the slave. And every story we see, like, could be Law and Order, it's always about, like, what about that movie, The Training Day, with Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke? Every story we see is about the authority figure is in a position of power working for a government, usually working for a government organization. And this causes the subconscious mind to have a massive magnetic attraction toward the toward employment in the government control grid, which can also lead to a whole host of other problems, leading from trauma, because that person will identify with the tyrant instead of with the abused. So if you're scared, to make a long story short, if you're scared in your childhood, and a lot of our childhood rituals in North America are designed to scare children, it will send you reeling through life, cascading through life, pinballing through life, where you're very prone to step into one bucket of crap and quickly step out into another two buckets of crap. Because don't forget that when you are also traumatized, there's three layers of your brain. There's an outer layer, there's a core, and there's what's called the reptilian brain. It's at the base of the spinal cord. It's your lowest IQ operation in your entire neural net. And when you're traumatized, guess which part of the brain gets activated the most? That one. So try navigating an adult life inside a corrupt society, working from a platform of super low IQ, which is what they want. Because then your life is in perpetual crisis. You're never going to get rid of your fear because you're living check to check. You keep gaining your weight. You keep taking, taking your medications, heading to the vaccine clinic, drinking after every Friday night, getting pizza. And then as your life falls apart, you're like, hey, I'm doing everything they told me to be safe. Why am I not safe? And of course, that's the design. Like, none of this is by accident.
Yeah, it's so perfectly designed, and it would have to be in the avoidance of being traumatized, people will inflict trauma upon themselves unknowingly, because that's really the only other option, right? If you're going to avoid a potential danger and you're not going to actually deal with it, then the only real thing that you could do was inflict it upon yourself.
Now, and that's the scariest feedback loop in trauma, is because say you're traumatized as a kid, say in a natural way. So say you have a parent die of natural causes. For you to get through that, your body has a self-defense mechanism, because it's very emotionally damaging to absorb the death of a parent all at once. So your neurological system disconnects. So it goes numb. It kind of tranquilizes you on purpose. And then as the weeks and months go by, it starts to reconnect your nervous system. And if you're not really aware of how this process works, the process being that your fear now and your trauma and your pain are going to come to the surface for you to deal with, if you're not aware it's going to come up to the surface, you're not going to be aware of that maybe 6 months down the road you start feeling very emotionally unstable. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, the easiest way to shut that fear off, oddly enough, that will trap the fear inside you. You will never let it go. But besides that point, the easiest way to shut the trauma off is to re-traumatize yourself, because you will re-engage the disconnection that your body does naturally when it's traumatized. So you became numb as a body defense to trauma, which is natural. And as that disconnection fades away, and you start feeling what you should be dealing with, you have to deal with despair and, you know, being down. You really do have to deal with it. And your body will reconnect the nervous system. If you have a drink, you shut it off. If you have a joint, you shut it off. If you have a Pepsi, you shut it off. If you have a pizza, you shut it off. So you can start re-traumatizing yourself to deal with the first trauma. As a side note, it's been shown that the narcotics, the Pepsi, oddly enough, caffeine is the most powerful tranquilizer. It doesn't matter what sedative or tranquilizing substance we're talking about, from opiates to toxic medication, or from the marijuana to the wine, this is all hand-delivered into the slave camp, because this is part of the cycle. Mm-hmm. This isn't free market economics at work. Nothing could be farther from the truth, because anybody in the right mind isn't going to go pay $30 for a bottle of poison at the liquor store. Right. Free market economics is a response to what people, you know, need to be better. This is something much more sinister. This is purposely traumatizing people and then making sure they stay sedated, because in a sedated state, they are always going to act like they're going to live in a permanent childhood. Mm. And it's easier to steal a candy from a baby than it is a real true adult who's unsedated.
Yeah, wow. This is another point where it gets really interesting, because one of the phrases that's been used to describe the fast food industry in particular, and you can lump in every single other thing, tobacco, alcohol, coffee, street drugs, recreational, pharmaceutical, et cetera, there's a word used called the weapons system. And this is a phrase that David Wilcock tuned me into personally, but it's coming from high level individuals, you know, in specific organizations that know about the deliberate intent of these industries in the weaponized vehicles of our food system and substance abuse kind of agenda that you're speaking to. And I just wanted to point that out for everyone listening. Like, it is actually a term. The weapon system is a term. And it's no, you know, if you want to go deeper down the rabbit hole, it's no coincidence that the inner cities in particular, in the minorities, or those that used to be minorities anyways, the disenfranchised among us are, in those communities, are the biggest targets.
When a good movement starts in society, and this has been going on for thousands of years, the groups I'm referring to, will leave them nameless, know that if there is an uprising of evolutionary energy, that you send in the drugs.
Right.
And then you can market it as free will. Like during Woodstock, it's very well documented that, the drugs were delivered into Woodstock by the CIA. Mm. And basically that was a good movement at one time. But like many, many, many other times in recorded and unrecorded history, the movement was targeted by drugs, and it doesn't matter what mind control research literature you review. If someone's under the influence of drugs, it doesn't matter if it's mercury fillings or LSD or marijuana or sugar or coffee. It doesn't matter. They're just more reflexively obedient to authority. It's easier to change their mind. They can't think straight. They act more like children than they do adults. Their IQs are lower. It doesn't matter what drug you use. And that's where the average person has a hard time understanding that all these non-natural products are part of a process by which people are like sliding down the mountain and they can't get their footing again. Plus, of course, the psychological topics we were talking about earlier, where if you do get your footing on the mountain, you're afraid to move because you're literally scared to death to climb up, because all the people you know are below you on the mountain. And as you look up the mountain, you see me and you. And that's really not enough to make them feel secure. And then at the top of the mountain, there's like Michael Tesserion. He's there alone. Right. So, or it might even be empty. So who wants to go up and be by themselves at the top of the mountain?
Yeah.
Like, if there's no one on the path, it's not that much fun to walk.
Yeah, this is such an important perspective, because it really, in so many ways, it really does come down to that, because people have an intrinsic need to feel like they belong, and to feel like they're in a community and they're connected empathetically with other human beings. And I definitely feel like empathy as an emotion or feeling is an evolutionary catalyst. And that's got to be one of the things going on. I definitely know when I drink coffee, every once in a while I'll have like a bulletproof coffee or something for entertainment purposes. However, I'm not asleep to the fact that more times than not, when I do drink coffee, it drives a sympathetic response. I'm probably more in that kind of primal or that immediate, not so much long-term thinking, but that short-term gratification state. And it drives the nervous system typically in a direction that does not support harmony or empathy. And I noticed that it's actually harder to access that empathetic response that allows me to connect with someone heart to heart when I'm under the influence of a particular substance, such as that, which is the most common drug in the world. You know, alcohol and coffee are got to be the biggest drugs going. And so I want to kind of see what your thoughts are on this notion of empathy being an evolutionary kind of catalyst and the suppression of that.
Well, the only reason you're not feeling empathy, because all those higher end brain functions exist only to be experienced in the outer core of the brain. And when you have the caffeine, you trigger the fight or flight. What you said was a sympathetic response, but it's the same thing. It's the fight or flight. And when you're in a fight or flight, you're going to inhibit the outer core, the outer shell, and the inner core of the brain will shut down. And all electrical energy will be shunted toward that the limbic brain or the reptilian brain, there's no empathy to be had there. Saying that, it should also be interesting to your listeners that the primary characteristic of a psychopath is a lack of empathy. So when you have, when someone's non-empathetic, it just means they're not going to consider the other person. And if you look into our society today, you have doctors poisoning children and adults for money. That's psychopathic. Okay, you have people crawling over each other like it was some kind of, you know, hedonistic orgy to compete for jobs that literally destroy our community. And if that's not a sign of the empathetic part of the brain being shut down, I don't know what other example I can provide. And this is what's happening in that non-empathetic sort of operation of the brain can be triggered by a small British cup of coffee, like a teacup. And people are having five times that, maybe twice a day. Caffeine doesn't leave the system for 24 hours and they're having it every day. Need I say more? And there's a reason the groups I talk about have scoured the world to find these mind-controlling substances, and people think it's, again, free market economy. This is all about Adam Smith. We're going to go down to South America and, you know, sub-Saharan Africa. We're going to get these coffee beans. Nothing could be further from the truth. These things are investigated and researched to the hilt. They're mind control chemicals. They really help drive home indoctrination and propaganda, because when you drink it, you're going to be operating from the lowest IQ part of the brain, the limbic system. So I know it's a shocker. I know you didn't want to go there with any of this it's all related.
Yeah, well, no, I definitely did. That's why we're having this conversation. You talk about living an addiction-free life, and when I heard or when I saw you say that, it really triggered something in me. I realized, like, wow, you know what? Every single person, to some extent, is living with emotional, mental, psychological, physical, or spiritual pain, and most people are managing it, they're coping with it, they're pacifying it, but they're not really healing it, and they have some kind of substance addictive abusive thing going on that's actually causing them to cope with a deeper level of pain. So I'm curious for you, whether it was coffee or alcohol or drugs or whatever it was, what was it for you that you gave up to live, as you say, an addiction-free lifestyle?
Well, I have this article. If people want to look it up, they can just put my name, Jason Christoph, and it's a story about me. So if they put that into Google, they're going to get that article. I was taking steroids, growth hormone, cocaine, magic mushrooms, LSD, alcohol, junk food, and also I was also successful in business at the time. So I was spending money. I was the stereotypical empty, soulless, immoral, unethical meatbag. Just a human mess, just a pure, almost like a Satanist. That's how I describe myself. Because, you know, the satanic doctrine, and you will come across it in this kind of research, is simply anything that's anti-life. So it has nothing to do with a guy in a pitchfork with a cloven hooves. It has to do with the destruction of life, the destruction of my cells, the destruction of your cells, the plotting of that, the cheerleading of that, picking up a toxic coffee, going to McDonald's next, staying up too late to kill a couple more cells, fornicating with other lost souls, having sex with other lost souls, spiritually wrecking yourself, physically wrecking yourself, mentally wrecking yourself. And you know what I found out? That is the most inept and lazy way to live, non-courageous and non-warrior life. It's a if you want to imagine my life, if anybody wants to imagine my life right now, I don't do any of that. But picture standing yourself in front of a blast furnace 24 hours a day with the flames coming out and almost burning you alive, and you're screaming at the top of your lungs, you could escape and sedate, but you don't, because that's real courage. I'm not going to have a drink, roll a joint, do a line of cocaine, and eat a big pizza just to forget about my empty and my empty life that I used to decorate with materialistic goods. Because that is a life not worth living. And I tell my daughter daily, don't fear anything but a meaningless life.
How old is your daughter?
She's 11. And she knows everything I talk about.
Wow, that is extraordinary. That's, oh man. There's like, I can relate to your words and the feeling tone coming from them so profoundly. I'm 32. I've been through multiple lifetimes in this one, and they've been really intense. And I can see the patterns. When I was most in my, I guess, self-integrity was when I was most in my martial art practice, because that was the medium of living my life where I didn't need to cope. And I think about this idea of like, what am I trying to cope with? What is the thing in me that is getting bored with life as it is? What is the thing in me that doesn't want to be here, that wants to check out? What kind of pain is living inside of me that I would actually desecrate this holy temple called a miracle of a body, but go to church? You know, me or anybody else. I don't go to church, but I go to Agape in LA when I'm there, so that's my church. Or I go to the beach and I go to nature, that's my church.
Right.
But you get my point, right? Like, what yep. is it inside of us that causes us, when I say us, I want to say us in the context of you, me, and everyone listening to something like this that is aspiring for their own sense of greatness, that's aspiring for something real. What is it inside of us that causes us to aspire, but then also resist our own, I guess, evolution?
Well, the soul always knows what it is. The soul always knows what our true vocation is. We were all sent here to do great things. No one was sent here to work a job they don't like, to buy things they don't need, which is exactly what most people are doing, flocking to a job just for safety and security because they're so afraid. And then they kind of burn their creative and unique talents as they do that. But so what exactly was the question again, Ronnie?
Yeah,
so you wanted
like,
to know
why
do they stop being their best?
Yeah, so we've already talked about how traumatized the majority of people are and the intricacies around that. Now I'm just kind of focusing this similar question on the demographic of us that are climbing the mountain, that are actually aspiring for greatness, like, because I feel like it's almost like a nuanced type of resistance, because we've worked through so much of those lower level resistances, but I feel like inside of me there is a subtlety to the resistance that's different than what it was when I was living in those lower level kind of survival.
Well, I can't address your case in particular because I didn't do any kind of intake assessment. You know, if I were to, you know, assess someone personally, I would do an intake form. But for everybody out there, if they're looking to evolve and ascend, this can't be done under the influence of unnatural chemicals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely impossible. I mean, that's why they're there, because they block ascension, they block maturation, they block our rite of passage from a child to an adult, where we take our place as an adult in the tribe. We have so many adults today engaging in this permanent childhood. You have 50-year-olds getting tattoos, 60-year-olds drunk at the bar. This is completely asinine. In a tribal society, the tribe would collapse if it were to act like this, and that's exactly why the global tribe is collapsing, because no one's maturing and taking their natural rite of passage from child to adult. Sure, it can be painful, because when we're children, all the energy is incoming. It's all coming one way. The arrows are coming into you. All the attention, all the energy is about supporting you, and it's all about you. And if we take this rite of passage, we're supposed to, you know, painfully morph into an adult where all the energy flows the other way. It's supposed to flow away from us to care for the children, to build the community, to educate, to maintain the knowledge for the tribe, teach people how to hunt and to care for themselves. So we give to ourselves until we die. That's our job as adults in the tribe, to be moral and ethical role models for the people who are coming next. And if you look out today, you have 50-year-olds playing video games and smoking joints and getting tattoos, dropping their kids off in daycare. It's absolutely horrendous that no one wants to do this maturation process, and it's always going to be blocked by the alcohol, the coffee, the junk food, the medical drugs, every sort of sedative, tranquilizing, distracting substance is smuggled into our communities on purpose so that we never equal the knowledge or power of our rulers. And it's time people started to get pissed off about that.
Well, you just hit on the head in terms of the maturation. Maybe that's what it really just comes down to, is this resistance to actually just grow up and be an adult.
It is, and that's what I try to get people to go to. It's just, you know, if you have a kid, you're an adult, your energy is going to flow out of you till you're dead. And if you die building your community in a moral and ethical way, well, that is an honorable life. As a Greek friend of mine once said, a hero dies once, a coward dies 1,000 times. And this is what our society is having a massive problem doing. And I don't know where the fire comes from. I've been this sort of aggravated since I walked on this planet, that there's really no adult out there to protect me. And then when I adult up and try to protect others, other disempowered adults try to get in my way. Mm-hmm. It's enough to drive a sane person insane.
Yeah, which has got to be part of the program as well.
Yeah, because you're just always fighting against the other slaves who just say, you know, why not just sit on the left hand of slave master? He'll help you out. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, he won't, because he never has, and you're being tricked, and you have to start adulting. Because you know what? The true adult never thinks of 5 or 10. Like, an adult always thinks 5 or 10 or 15 years down the road. A child thinks 5, 10, or 15 minutes down the road, and that's sort of a litmus test you can give your own behavior at any time.
Right.
And most people today are just in for the instant gratification. That's why they're having sex with their secretaries in the broom closet and having 3 cups of coffee and not eating healthy food, because they're children. Because they don't think. I mean, how do you think that the office affair, or the junk food at the, you know, the constant ingestion of junk food isn't going to affect you in 5 years, or maybe even the week after, or maybe even that afternoon, because the average person is not thinking long-term. They're not adults, and like I said, that's the main part of the problem. But then again, Ronnie, fear traps people in a permanent childhood, because it's the lowest IQ part of the brain that trauma kind of fires up. So it's not like any of this is happening organically.
Yeah.
It's not really the people's fault. It's an engineered, orchestrated, planned control grid.
Yeah, and once you realize that it's not people's fault, even though people do have responsibility, when you realize that it's not people's fault, then as, I guess, leaders, if you want to say, we're kind of put in an interesting, perplexing position, because we can't really be judgmental of them. So it's kind of like, even though it's an uphill battle, we have to serve. Like, it's just like there's no other option, right? We have to do our best to help and shed light on it, even if we get kind of we get slapped around here and there, and we get knocked to the ground for our beliefs and our perspectives, and we get criticized. It's kind of like, when you see the whole thing and you kind of see what's going on, you can't really be mad at people. So the only thing to do is actually find ways to love them and love them through their process.
Yeah, and that's why I always try to, you know, take the disguises and take the cloaks off on my Facebook page. I try to always expose the mechanisms by which people are being controlled so they can just see it for themselves and make the change and you know, understand that they are kind of being attacked from many angles. And it's all part of the awakening. So, yeah, it's not best to judge them. It's just good to try and do. Everybody just has to do their part. And the first part is to get healthy. If you don't get healthy, none of this is going to make any sense.
Right. Yeah, we don't need any more overweight conspiracy theorists running around, or not theorists, but factualists. We don't need any more overweight, spiritually enlightened teachers that are, we don't need any of that. We need everyone to get healthy first, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, because if you're healthy, the sympathetic nervous response will calm down. You'll activate all three layers, you know, all three portions of your brain to kind of work in unison. And that's what happens naturally. And then when you have, you know, they say humans don't use 80% of their brain. They use all of their brain when they're calm.
Yeah.
And the power of the human brain is immense. And that's why we're always trying to, you know, our handlers are always trying to cordon us off to that very small portion. So it's all about getting healthy and just moving ahead. Do some baby steps and start with their diet and healthy habits. And they'll get inspiration every step of the way.
Fantastic, man. This was such a fantastic conversation. Very enlightening. And I know so many people, their minds are going to be blown in all the right ways. And so for everyone that wants to check out your very prolific writings, articles, videos, and everything that you're putting out there in the world, where can they do that?
They go to Jason Christoff on Facebook. It's Christ with an OFF on the end. It's a, you know, I think there's a couple pages, but the one you want to go to is a picture of me, my wife, and my daughter on a boat. Mm-hmm. That's the profile pic. I do post articles on that Facebook page at jchristoff.com, just the letter J. And eventually, if someone's on the Facebook page, they'll make it to my blog where I have 1,300 articles where I rant. I just let the energy out because I have no other way. I don't sedate it. It just flows out of me.
That's inspiring.
Yeah.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure and honor, and I'm very happy that you're able to make the time and join me today.
Well, thank you, Ronnie. Keep up the great work. Together we'll make a huge difference, and everybody's coming along just fine. Everything's going great.
Yes, relax. Nothing is under control, but it all is at the same time.
Exactly. Thank you.
And plus there's like a historical sort of, you're in the university, you're always like referring to other people. So it's just like, and these people have been talking rubbish, so it's just like a big long line of crap, you know what I mean, for a long time.
No, I think it's just really difficult to be objective when, like, majority of people are primarily concerned with how other people view them. You know, they don't want to be viewed a certain way.
Yeah.
So they won't want to espouse certain ideas or question certain things because it's going to make them be viewed a certain way. It's like, even people that probably, here's this too, it's like even people that don't really get into politics too much, you know, maybe mm-hmm. they find it just distasteful altogether. They still wouldn't want to be associated with Donald Trump, you know,
nice.
and being like questioning global warming would like put them in this perceived right wing mm-hmm. category, and they don't like that. They may not necessarily envision themselves as being a leftist or a Democrat or whatever. They just don't want to be associated with those ideas because they have come across where that idea is associated with backwardness or, you know, anti-science or just
Holocaust denial, everything that kind of like
Holocaust denial.
That's the ultimate one, like that.
Yeah, and that's what the guy was talking. He was asking me the other night, like, oh, like it's just like Holocaust deniers or flat earthers. Oh. And so you believe the Earth is flat? And he started asking me that, and I was like, well, no. But what does that have to do with any of this we're talking about? Well, mm-hmm. I was talking to John and we were talking about this. It's like how many people, like his friends and people he knows, like that know about the idea that the shootings being fake and hoaxed and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. and knowing about like flat earth being a thing. And it's like a lot of people are probably, most people know about it. They're familiar with this now. Like, oh, there's like all these people that believe flat earth, and they're also conspiracy theorists, and they're also moon landing deniers. Because I think that came up, like I said, yeah, I don't know, I don't believe in the moon landing and all that. It's like, oh, so you believe in flat earth. Mm-hmm. And that's just now that's the automatic response, and that's the conditioned response that's been installed into people. It's crazy.